Right, today I'm in Gloucestershire with professional punter, predominantly in running punter, Johnny Mack. Hello, John. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today. First of all, the question that a lot of people want to know, is in running still like finding it on the floor like they say it used to be?
Definitely not. Definitely not. It's become a lot harder over the years. I don't know whether it's liquidity or whatever, but no, it's definitely not the game it used to be, that's for sure.
So you've been successful for a number of years. How did you first get into gambling, betting?
Well, gambling has been from day one, really. My mum worked at Gloucester Dog Track, so I was brought into the game through that. My dad was always a gambler. You know, both their families were gamblers, and just been basically involved in the game all my life, basically.
So how long did it take before your recreational gambling became quite successful? And were you a successful punter before you started in running betting?
I was the worst punter in the world from the age of possibly about 16 till God knows when, my 20s. Usual thing, get me wages, had various jobs. Started off, I actually worked in betting shops for Corals and other bookmaking firms. I'd just go in on my days off, have a punt, but basically I'd put my money away, and I was the your stereotypical mug gambler. And then I started punting dogs at Swindon. That became successful in my early 20s, and then with everything, all good things come to an end, and it sort of, I lost then, and then it sort of evolved around, eventually getting to the in running, basically.
So you mentioned that Swindon became successful. I mean, what was your angle there? Because most people can't win betting on dogs.
Well, I started to get the videos for a start, and I think that that's a monumental thing as regards greyhounds. I think it gives you a massive edge. A lot of the bookmakers won't actually look at the videos. I certainly know of one now who says, well, I'm doing a bit now, and they'll say, oh, that'll frazzle your brain, why are you bothering doing that? Well, maybe true. I think it makes it more informative. You see every dog in the race. I think you've got more information at your fingertips than you know what you need to require to make it pay, basically. I think that was the defining moment at Swindon why I made it pay there.
So moving on then to when you got into in running betting, how did that start? And did you have a mentor or somebody that said, hang on, you should come and have a look at this?
I sort of stumbled across it because Betfair obviously was starting to take off in the 2000s, early 2000s. I had heard about, just through word of mouth, working at the race course, different things about this in running. So I was a layer to start with, but I'm a bit ashamed to admit that being in the game as long as I had, I didn't get the concept that if there was two runners, I was trying to lay a 10 for one. Basically, I'm backing 10 on the other one. You know, when only two could win. Well, needless to say, you know, you got to get, well, you've got to get at least 11 right to them, and it wasn't going to happen, you know, and I failed at that. So then I started again. Somebody offered me a job, £50 a day, going out and calling for them. That went well. And then I just decided to branch out on my own, really.
So when you had your first goes at in running, you were doing your money, where were you doing it from?
In the stands, predominantly. Like I say, waiting till there was two runners and then picking one, which the jump racing, that's fine. The flat is almost impossible to do that. Obviously, you've got your big handicaps at certain meetings. You ain't two runners, is it? Like, you know, and that's basically it. But it was a failure. But as with everything in life, you know, you've got to experience the failures to get it right, like, you know.
So what's your angle these days?
Is there one? I think I'm trying a lot of different things at the moment. I don't know whether there is an angle. I you know, you've got to try and come out with new ideas. Otherwise, you'll just die on the spot. But I haven't really got nothing. What I would say, I mean, I could argue that my main thing is obviously certain tracks they're head on. They're looking at you head on, and I'm sort of side on. But then you find that those tracks' liquidity isn't as good as the other tracks. So it's more about getting a wage. You know, just ticking over, trying to get yourself a wage now instead of the good old times when I could afford cruises with the wife and the kid.
But I mean, even getting a wage by definition is means you're still a professional punter and earning a living backing horses. How much have you had to evolve to survive as an in-running punter?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, massively. I mean, my... Unfortunately, we've got a nice house, but it's we've had to rent it. I think my exes every month, I think we've got to get about $4,000 a month, basically. So you've got to evolve. You've got to, you know, you've got... 2 or 3 years ago, well, no, about 4 or 5 years ago, I was easily achieving that. Now it is a struggle, but I'm winning, you know, and you know, you just got to try and keep moving forward, I suppose.
And do you specialise in jumping or flat on the horse racing?
I do both. I prefer the flat, if I'm honest. I don't know. I think that it's like everything. In the summer, there's a lot more meetings and a lot more in runners. Sort of spread about different tracks, but you know, they're the competitive races, as it were, and in the winter, you know, you've got a choice of three tracks, say, an all weather and two others. I sort of do both. I think the flat's better for the in running, but I've not got a personal preference of them both. I like them both, to be honest.
Now, in running world, you would be possibly slightly derogatorily classified as a twitcher. Can you explain to people what a twitcher is?
I think it started when there was a few... I used to... In certain things, I sort of... I hate to say, I don't want to make it sound as if I'm a clever bloke or not, but I was doing things before other people were, as it were. Southall, classic example. I used to go down the back straight, it'd be the middle of winter. I can remember one day I was in this shelter down there and the rain was coming in, it was about 3 degrees and it was sleeting into my face, and I know that a few of the lads in the boxes were saying, look at the twitcher again, absolutely massacred over there. So that's that. Obviously bird watching, and you know, I'm a twitcher. So
have you ever been thrown off course for doing it? I think some race courses frown upon it.
One thing I love is when the security comes up to you at the races and they say, you're doing that illegal betting. I absolutely love that. I had an instance with a guy the other week at a track, come up to me and said, yeah, I'd been sort of going down to my calling spot for a couple of races, and then all of a sudden he appeared alongside me. And said, yeah, I know what you're doing. I said, what am I doing? He said, you're doing that illegal betting. I said, well, if I'm doing something illegal, you best call the police then and get me arrested, because you know, I don't think it is illegal. But you know, we had a nice conversation, and fair play, actually, he shook me hand. But hey, you know, they're just doing their job, I'm trying to do my job. I got, you know, that's the way it goes, basically.
So you say that you're down the track, so you're watching the race a fair way out from the business end.
Yeah.
Whereabouts is your favourite sort of spot, or do you change it around?
Started off, bloody hell, must be 14, 15 years ago now. No, about 12, 13 years ago. And I was on three-quarter pole. There was a team used to go a furlong and half a furlong out, and I was sort of in between them. Now I'm, you know, different places now. I used to go down, I started off on the three quarter, like I say, then I went to a furlong, then a furlong and a half, there was more people coming out. And eventually I got to the two pole, which in some tracks is okay, other tracks it isn't, you know. So I just gotta, the ones what ain't that good, I gotta change, basically.
So watching a race from so far out, you're gonna make a snap decision. What signs are you looking for? Can you give us any of your trade secrets?
Yeah, I can remember giving somebody an example. There was a horse what used to run at Lingfield on the all weather, and we would talk, a lot of the in-runners would talk, and I'd go in it. The horse was called Turner's Touch, horse of Gary Moore's. I think the best comment is long-standing maiden, I think is the best comment. Anyway, I called it, and it predominantly dogged it and got beat, and I went in, and they said, oh, what do you bet there? And I said, oh, I bet Turner's Touch. And one bloke said, well, I always had a bit of respect for you. Now I haven't. But the way I see it, or then, not so much now, they're the sort of horses I want to be backing, because everybody are looking to lay that horse because they all know it's a dog and it ain't going to win. You know, it may be right, it may never win, but they were probably the prices what I would get. I would sort of want to look where everybody else isn't looking, and that's without being reckless and just betting horse for the sake of betting it.
Okay, are you predominantly a backer or a layer then?
A backer. I've been all my life. It's quite interesting, actually. A couple of people said to me in the past, it's so easy to just lay. Everybody knows that what's going to get beaten, you can lay that. So I'm a backer. I don't get out of them. You know, a lot of people lay back. I don't. The only time I'll probably lay back is in a steward's inquiry or in a photo.
Now, I understand that there's quite a lot of political stuff going on with you in running guys. They're all over the place. You're quite competitive. Have you ever had any run-ins with box players up there paying fortunes to watch the same races?
Playing fortunes? I don't know. I'm the sort of guy, I try and get on with everybody, you know. One bloke said to me, one in-runner said, your biggest problem is you want to be everybody's pal. Well, I think there's a fine line being, listen, we're all out for the same thing. I get the box players, why box players would actually have a gripe about paying a lot of money and seeing people there. But, you know, we're all trying to make, and I think a lot of the people who are actually out calling would probably pay a little bit more, you know, would be willing to pay as well. But it's, you know, I got pals who's box players, and I don't, you know, there is obviously that little edge to everybody, but I haven't had no real problems with them, to be honest.
Okay, so it's all fair in love and war then when in running punting. What do you think about the people FaceTiming pictures at home? Is that a...
Well, it's, do you know what? It's such a strange one, because the callers were the first ones out, and then they come out, and then the box players come and they say, oh, you know, we're paying this money. Why are they there? You know, they probably, which they, you know, they got a point. Now all of a sudden it's as if those two people are against the FaceTimers, which it's a difficult, listen, it's hard because everybody's trying to make a living at the game. It's very, very hard at the moment. There's no doubt about that. I know some people who's going well, some people are struggling, and a lot more fail. But for me, the FaceTimers, you know, I it ain't for me to say whether I can stop it. Personal view, some of the tracks where they go to, the markets are a lot stronger.
Right, Johnny, you mentioned earlier that you've got a button presser at home. Now, you must put an awful lot of faith into that button presser.
My button presser, since I began, has been my nephew, Scott, who he's worked with me all his working life since he left school. Well, he's actually working at school, not clicking for me, but at certain people at the races, doing little bits and pieces. Recently I haven't used Scott as much because I've only been doing it part time, and my sister clicks for me a bit. Do you know what, he's part of the success, I would say, or a big part of the success. you get a rapport with somebody. He's absolutely brilliant for me. I got my utmost faith in him, although he's going to see this now and remind me of that. Yeah, he's very, very good, Scott. Just got a great working relationship.
Right, Scott's obviously very, very good because you just said he is, but there must have been a disaster where Scott has messed right up.
See, the thing is, yes, there will be disasters because invariably, one thing I do, which is different to, I don't know, a lot of in-runners, not like I know what everybody does, but if there's a 28 runner maiden at Newmarket, a lot of people think I'm a freakish for this, I can learn all the colours of all the horses in probably 10 minutes. So I know every horse and I know the colours, so I'm giving him a commentary. And I think this makes his job a lot easier. So I think he made, in the last 4 or 5 years we've worked, I think he's made probably 6 mistakes. But the good thing is with actually backing, it's only going to be one unit. It'd be sort of a lot worse if I was laying, because obviously if you're laying a 10.50s, one or some, or a 10.00 to one, you do a grand if he makes a mistake. But if I'm having sort of 200 or 300 quid a click, you do 200 or 300 quid, whatever.
I've just had a thought. I mean, if you can learn them that quick, you know how much commentators earn. You're in the wrong game.
I do you know something? It's so strange, really, because a guy, the first bloke I worked for, the very first race, he had a presser and he went on and he said, he rung me back 5 minutes after the race, and I can't remember, it was probably a maiden at Windsor or something. And he said, I just cannot believe this. He said, you should be a commentator, you know. And I said, I don't know who'd want to listen to a carrot cruncher drolling on forevermore. Don't think I got the voice for commentating, to be honest.
You'd be right down our way.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, monetarily figures. Quick, biggest disaster, how much?
Like I say, it's never been, because I'm a backer. I remember I went, one day I went to, not monetary, I was at, did a double up one day, it was Windsor in the evening, may have been Brighton in the day or somewhere like that, and I think I saw 12 races, I called 11 losers. I think the word Stevie Wonder was branded round by Scott then and things like that, but yeah, I think I'd done about $3,500 that day.
On a happier note, biggest win?
That was at a very cold Lingfield in early January, 4 or 5 years ago. Mark Johnson had won in the race, was 101 from a furlong out. Stan Moore had a horse I caught in the corner of my eye blasting it, and I got matched 1,000 to £18 it. I think all in we won about $24,000 on the race.
So favourite track then, Lingfield?
Unfortunately not. That was where the good times ended at Lingfield, unfortunately, and getting kicked out of various spots where I was successful from at Lingfield. So they, I don't know. Favourite track, you know, to go to, I love York. York is, for me, the best track. My family's been going out there for 26 years on holiday. And it is a good track in running. Bath is okay, but I think the facilities at Bath are not that great. But I do like Bath because it's just up the road and it reminds me of a lot of my childhood going there.
So how many days would you go out on average now?
It varies from week to week. In the summer, I'll definitely do a lot more. So much racing. I'll try to do 5, 6, 7 days in the summer. The winter, not so much because I have got other things going on. So, you know, I try and sort of split things around really.
So do you do any form study and have any pre-race opinions?
Well, as I touched on earlier, the Turner's Touch race, which was about 10, 12 years ago, and people still remind me of the name. So I followed the game all my life. I'm not saying I don't know the horses, because I do. I don't want an opinion, to be honest. I just want, say, I don't know, say Cato Star would be run against a handicapper from Worcester. If I see the handicapper from Worcester flying and making ground, I want to be with that one. You know, and I know a lot of people say, well, you know, but I just want to see what I see with sort of a blank canvas sort of thing.
It's one of the hardest parts of your job, must be slogging around the road, especially in the summer, where it can be awful. How many miles a year do you reckon you do?
Going back about 3 or 4 years, my average was 70,000 miles a year, because I would do a lot of the northern tracks, Catterick. On one ridiculous day, on a Sunday, I drove to Musselburgh and back. That was a bit of a jaunt, but I was at Bath the next day, so it didn't really matter. But yeah, about now I'm doing sort of, I would say, 40 or 50,000, because I've cut down a bit and sort of picking me bunches, really.
Do you think that making a living from betting and running is going to be sustainable long term?
I think it's definitely getting harder, without any doubt whatsoever. There isn't no doubt whatsoever with that. I think there's still money in the markets. I think there's still chances. Where it'll be in a few years, God only knows. Because I think that if you asked the question 5 years ago, I would say, this is me for life. I'm sort of almost touching 50 now. Some people might say I look a lot older, but I think I would like to. I would think then that I would do this till I retire. But now I don't think I will. But you know, you just gotta roll with the punches, I suppose, and do the best you can.
As liquidity on racing on Betfair has decreased, it means that there's probably a lot less mug punters leaving orders up and running, which I understand you guys used to rely on to snap up. Do you now think it's just a lot of shrewdies eating each other?
This is a very interesting subject, because, see, I hate the words mug punters, although there is, undoubtedly, you know, I was a mug punter when I was a punter, but in running, you're right, it's probably the right phrase, actually. There certainly isn't no more people who would just go home on a Monday night and watch Windsor and put their money in the markets. If I'm honest, I can remember a lot of people, there's a lot of rubbish spoke about, oh, he's got so much advantage in terms of seconds and things like that, or, you know, I would like to be on a level playing field with everybody. That's what I would like. I would like everybody to get the as quick as I think the liquidity would be better, and I think there would be something for everybody, and you know, they would be able to market it better, I think.
So you think the people at home thinking that they're on a level playing field, they could beat you and your skill would outbeat them, is that what you're saying?
Not as such, I don't want that sound in an arrogant way, because it hasn't meant like that in any way. It's just I feel that, you know, you would get some races right, they would get some it right, but it would be generated through, you know, there'd be so many playing at it, there'd be some it there for everybody, I feel.
So somebody that's looking at this now and they're thinking, I'll tell you what, I could have a go at that. What's the golden rules for a racing and running punter?
Start with a million and end up with half, I think.
It's supposed to be positive.
I don't know, really. I mean, you know, the boxes, I don't know whether the lads in the boxes doing well or not. I don't know, you know, I'd love to see more people come into the game, to entice them into the game. You know, I think the pictures would be, if we could get the pictures more and market it better from Betfair, but and even BetDAC. But I don't think that they. I think that it's. Whereas when I first came into the game, 14-50, it was a priority, the in running. Now I think it's more of a headache to the firms, I think.
Is there anything a fledgling in running punter should avoid doing at all costs?
I don't know, really. I would say laying at the massive prices, I think, that you could potentially end up losing a fortune, but it's not really for me to say. You know, there'll be people, I guarantee there'll be people on here and say, well, I made plenty at that, so, you know, I can't really say avoid anything, just the bad tracks, really. I got me good tracks and me bad tracks, plenty of bad tracks, so.
Now, have you thought about twitching in foreign climbs? Never thought about going to foreign racing and giving it a go there, or would the expenses make it non-viable?
I've thought about Ireland, definitely, because for what I do, I think there's definitely a gap in the market. Definitely, I think I'd have a chance there. Politically, Ireland, I don't know what how they see in runners, how you'd be frowned upon. So, you know, it's difficult to know, really.
Okay, so would you advise others to give it a go in running?
Yeah, I wouldn't put them off, but I would say, what I would say to them, don't expect the lavish lifestyle and the great gains, because those days are gone, I feel, to be honest.
Now, when we first met, you were at Toaster Dogs, and I understand you also still quite active dog betting. So do you punt in other ways, and that actually make it pay to add to the income from the in running?
Yeah, I punt at Toaster. I have done for the last 18 months now. I make a few quid at that. It helps in terms of taking the pressure off the in running when it's in the winter. Because me mum was so into the dogs, that's where my heart lies, to be honest, the dogs. But I do love the racing, but yeah, I've been do the videos at Toaster, and with some modicum of success, I would say.
So would you always go to the track there and bet with the on-course bookies, or do you sit at home and watch it and punt with online bookies or telephone bookies?
No, it's Toaster now race 4 times a week. It's usually Friday evening at home on RPG TV, as it is on Sunday. Saturday mornings is usually on at the races, so, you know, it's usually Betfair those mornings with the odd time. Well, the firm's price up, I think Bet365 price up every race, as does Paddy Power, and then the other firms follow later on in the day. But, you know, you just can't get on. You know, it's just impossible. You might last for one a week, basically.
So how do you get around that?
Well, I bet on, obviously, Betfair. I've got a Betfair account, and BetDAC as well, which isn't too bad for the dogs. It's just impossible, you know. You've got to, you know, without trying to drop, you've got to get people to do things for you. Try and punt dogs for you. But they know, you know, they suss you out within times. There's a lot of family members I've had who've had accounts for me to bet dogs. But, you know, and the best of it is, I think the biggest bet I've had at Toaster is 150 quid on a dog. You know, in all the time I've been there, I sort of not a big player. I know there'll be plenty of people say, you know, I've had this conversation with another guy who says you should be having more on your naps, which he's probably right. But A, it frustrates me when I can't get on, and B, it just suits me what I'm doing, you know, I'm ticking over, really, I suppose.
So what you said, you can't get on, would that be with the on-course bookies, or?
The on-course are okay. Certainly at Toaster, I mean, you know, the Derby at Toaster is just off the scale. I think it's, I know a lot of people are slating me for this, but I think it's the best track in the country. I love the place. During the Derby, it's ridiculous. When Ben turns up, the atmosphere, he has a right go, takes bets. It's just great. But obviously, then you get the reality of a dark Saturday night when there's about 3 people there. You can get what you like on a Toaster. You can, you know, if you want a monkey on a dog, you would, not that I ever would, but you'd get a monkey on, no problem at all. I would say it's a very strong market. I don't know how the betting percentages are to other tracks, but you would get on a fair bet there, no doubt.
So aren't you more tempted, rather than messing around getting people to put your bets on, wouldn't it be better just to go up there, or would that interfere too much with your in running elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, but obviously, I mean, at the moment, at a Toaster, I'm, you know, as a punter, I look and I see dogs, say if I, well, usually my base price is 2-1 anyway. I won't bet a dog on the 2-1. But you'll see a dog trading at 6-4 at the track and it's like 3.2 on Betfair. I don't know, they've got a remit to bet to a certain percentage as the book is there, which, listen, they got to make a living as well. And I got no issue with that. It's just that it doesn't really suit me to punt. Now, I would like to go there. I'd like to go there every meeting and punt. That would suit me. But, you know, it's just unfortunate I can't, I think.
Now, we're talking before we did this interview, and you've got a few strong opinions about some of the way Betfair treat their customers. And you said you'd quite happily talk about that. Are you still interested in talking about that?
Yeah, no problem. I think it's like everything in this country. See it with the England football team. We get them up, you know, to when they get knocked out, all of a sudden, well, it was rubbish. With Betfair, they come along with all these great ideas. We're going to work for the man in the street and all that, which, listen, no one can deny that they've changed a lot of people's lives round for the better. Listen, they've given me 15 great years of my life, and I wouldn't change anything, but I think they really, you know, the thing was, we've got to put these premium charges on people because we want more people to do, we got to entice more people into the in-running game. Well, I would say the liquidity, I would be interested to see, since they made that statement, how much the liquidity has changed. I don't think it's either it hasn't worked or they've just basically, I don't know, ripped people off, I think.
So do you think eventually the premium charge and the way that successful punters are treated on exchanges could be the end of successful punters?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I the one thing I've learnt in doing the in-running, which, listen, hindsight's always the greatest thing in the world, but really, you've got to make a killing when you can, and that's the long and short of it. You know, if you find something good, you smash into it and you really give it. You know, because it's only going to be good for so long, because they will definitely, in the end, you know, rail you in, I suppose. Yeah.
So how do you keep one step ahead?
Very difficult. I suppose just on intuition. You've just got to go with what you think. If you think something's right, you do it. If you don't, then you listen. You know, I'm not as absolutely thousands and thousands of things I've done wrong. Funny enough, I watched on Racing UK something, a Richard Hughes interview, talking about all the horses he had ridden at Royal Ascot, and he came out with a statement, and I thought, Jesus, not loads of Richard Hughes fan. I was never afraid to lose on any horse he rode, and I think you've got to be like that with the punting. The day you say to yourself, well, I can't afford to lose this, I can't afford it, is the day, then you've got to think to yourself, well, hang on a minute, you know, because you're believing the horse is going to win, like he's riding, as or the dog you're going to bet is going to win.
Now, you're a married man with a family. How do you balance family life with what must be an extremely stressful at times career, professional gambling?
Family is everything to me. Is the you know, my wife, I'm ridiculously lucky to have found somebody like her, an amazing person. She don't understand the gambling. When I first got with her, she tried to explain to her family what I did, and they said, oh, punter then, he's gonna be no good, which I agree with them. You know, that they think, not low's no good, but I agree, you know, that's a good reaction. But when I took her to Toaster one day, actually on the jumps, and it was Boxing Day, the first day we went racing, to show her what I did in running. And it was quite a sad day actually, because the first race there was a mare of Alan King's and it was unbeaten and it fell two out and lost its life, and we had to be stood right by the owner of it, an old lady, and her granddaughter, and she was in floods of tears, and I always remember that. But Anne, my wife, saw what I did. She saw that it wasn't just a case of me going to the track, having a laugh with the lads. Well, I do have a laugh with the lads, but going to the track, it's work. She's totally behind me, everything. Every single thing I've suggested. Some things she might say, oh, I don't know about that, John. You know, you might want to have another think about that. Just phenomenal lady for me, in terms of levelling me, really. And my son, Matthew, he's, you know, I don't have to worry about, you know, she looks after Matt, but she looks after both of us. You know, I think the success of the in running is a lot down to both of them. It's great to come home, Matthew's there, and Anne's waiting. She always says, always ring on the way home. She always say to me, you don't need to say any more. I know who you've gone from the first sentence. So, yeah. Also, my dad as well is a massive, massive influence. And I would say my dad, Anne, and Scott, who's been with me most of my working life, is, you know, they are the three influences, as in work and you know, helping me through the rough times, which inevitably you're gonna, but you know, I try and make sure that I don't get many days off, but when I do, I always do something with Anna Matthew, be it go to the pub for lunch, a day at Western on the beach or something, or we go somewhere. But the days off are few and far between, unfortunately.
Now, there must have been several times where you've hit absolutely rock bottom. How many times have you thought, right, I'm turning this in?
Funny enough, a few weeks back, I said to Anne, we've got ourselves not set for life, that's nowhere near, but I started off with £300 when I did the in running before I was with Anne, and we've got, you know, Anne's got a few quid saved, we've got a few quid saved for Matthew. I've got a little bit, not a lot to be going on with, but I said, you know what, we could just leave the life of a normal person, get a job, and you know, and just do whatever. But the voice of reasoning come again, Anne, and she said, well, you know, let's go through, let's have a look at your figures, because she never says that, she just leaves it all to me. She, as far as she's concerned, I deal with all that, but when I'm at a low, this is what I'm saying about how good she is. And she said, well, you've earned X amount of pounds at Towster, you've earned X amount of pounds in running, where are you going to get a job like that? And she was right.
So in 10 years' time, you're going to be sat here telling me the same thing?
I don't know, the crystal ball. Do you know what? In 10 years' time, the one thing I would like to be is still as happy as I am now with Anne and Matthew, which I think we will be. I think that's more important to me than anything. As regards work, who knows? I mean, I loved working at the races. I worked for Mark Hill at the races for a long time. That was great years of my life, and Mark was a fantastic tutor, as it were, as well as a boss. Although he was good at dishing out the bollockings as well on occasions. But yeah, he was good, Mark, very good. I don't know whether I'd want to go down that road, or even maybe you know, a pitch at a dog track, maybe Towster, which I don't think I'll get, but you know, something like that would be, I'd be interested in, to be honest.
And finally, any regrets?
Many regrets, but you know, I think the thing is, you've got to look forward to the future. You can look back at regrets and beat yourself up, which I do occasionally. There's certainly things I would change, but you know, life is about the now and the future, and I think you've got to look forward instead of backwards.
Thank you very much.
Johnny Ward presents The Front Runner in association with starsports.bet. 18 and over. Be gamble aware.